Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
I'm Teddy Cahill. We've got Mike Lanana here, and we want to thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by HealthIQ. HealthIQ, helping health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. Now, Mike, it's another Monday. It's tax day, I guess. Did you do your taxes?
I will be. I'm among the people scrambling right now in the United States of America to do his taxes. But honestly, college baseball and this podcast, way more important.
They are.
Way more important.
And so, in addition to it being tax day, it's another College Monday, which means there's a new edition of the Baseball America Top 25. And you can check that out over at baseballamerica.com.
Yeah, there's nothing taxing about listening to this podcast. You're going to enjoy this podcast.
I'll leave that to the listeners to decide. but I'd like to think so as well. So, in this new edition of the Baseball America Top 25, powered by Louisville Slugger, it was a little more calm this week around the country. We had a few weeks of a lot of turmoil in the top 25, and this week things are a little more status quo.
Yeah, almost a little disappointingly calm. You know, I kind of like the chaos to a degree, although I guess it's nice to get a little breather and, take a week to...
Every week can't be chaos.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Some weeks you just need things to go as you expect them to go. Some weeks you can predict ball. This week... Yeah, not a whole lot changed. It was chalk through four. We did a little shuffling in the top 10. Really, you know, the biggest series that happened was outside of the top 10, for me at least, in the Big 12, between Texas and Oklahoma, battling for the Big 12 crown there. We thought coming into the year, you know, this is Texas Tech's division, Texas Tech's conference to win, and Texas Tech is doing great. They're in our top 10, but Texas and Oklahoma have made things really interesting here. Texas goes to Oklahoma, obviously a very fierce rivalry there, and they take that series, a huge series win for them. They were a team that were in our preseason top 25, hit a little bit of a lull a few weeks ago, have turned it on since Big 12 play started, although they struggled a little bit out of the gate there too. But now they're sitting in first place in the Big 12 at 11-4. Ahead of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, another pleasant surprise in the Big 12 this year, a team that's taken a nice step forward after a down year last year. And all of a sudden, this Big 12, you have Texas Tech in fourth place, and you don't have a lot of games separating these four teams. I mean, what do you make of this picture right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Those four teams are all within three games of each other, and if you look at it in one way, Texas is on top. If you look at it another way, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are tied for being in first place. Like, there's nothing separating these teams at this point, essentially. And, so it was a big weekend for Texas to go up on the road and find a way to win a couple really tough games at Oklahoma. You can read more about this in Off the Bat over at baseballamerica.com. But, you know, when I was talking with Coach David Pierce last night, you know, he was talking about just the way that the Longhorns competed all weekend, just how hard they fought for these wins. And, you know, they went into Friday night's, they're late in Friday night's game, they're losing, and they score, I think it's 3 runs in the 9th inning to come back for a 7-6 win. And then on Saturday, it was, you know, Oklahoma jumps out to a 3-0 lead kind of early on. Texas fights back to tie it up in like the 6th or the 7th maybe. And then Zach Zubia hit a 2-run homer in the 8th that ultimately proved to be the difference. And that's how Texas wins this series. And then Oklahoma finishes it off, wins the finale, which was a significant result for the Sooners as well, because it does, like, that win kept them ahead of Texas in the loss column. They still have a series in hand. Texas has played one more series, so the Sooners still find themselves in a good position because they found a way to make sure that they won a game, you know, having lost these two really tough, kind of heartbreaking games that, you know, really could have broken their spirit, I guess, in some ways. But, you know, they come back and they finish strong on Sunday. But overall, really good weekend for Texas at the end of what must have been a very emotional week for the Longhorns. It started on last Monday, which was the celebration for life for Augie Garrido. This team is still largely composed of players he recruited. Many of them were coached by him. You know, so that's weighing on them still, or you know, I mean, that he died a month ago. And, you know, so they're still, you know, dealing with all of that. And then on Tuesday, they go to College Station and play their other huge rival in A&M, and they lose by 1 run in another really tough game. And then they go up for this rivalry series. So it was just a big, difficult week for Texas. And to come out of that at 2-2, I think is a really nice week for them. They rise to 20 in the top 25 this week. And, you know, they're in a really strong position here in the Big 12.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. And then you look at them this next week coming up. Things take a little bit of a dip schedule-wise for them. It's a breather. Yeah, they don't have to play a Big 12 series this weekend, so they get a little break from the grind of that. Meanwhile, Oklahoma has to pick itself right back up and go to Texas Tech, which is going to be another big-time series to watch this weekend in the Big 12, a series that has ramifications going forward as far as who's going to win this conference. You know, potentially hosting implications as well. Oklahoma's outside of the hosting picture right now, or at least kind of on the bubble.
They were in a week ago. We'll see if they're still in.
We'll have to discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, they were on the edge, and it's going to be tight now. And obviously winning this weekend would be a huge step for them. And, you know, we've talked about it here before. You know, they're in the stretch of this really, really tough four straight weekends of at TCU, Texas, at Texas Tech, and then Bedlam. And, you know, so far they're 3-3 in those weekends. And, you know, if they can keep riding that, I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, maybe 6-6 is good enough. It's probably not going to win the Big 12 if they go 6-6, but maybe that's enough to get where they want to get ultimately. But Oklahoma State, let's not overlook the Cowboys here, Mike. They won a series at West Virginia. That's their now third straight Big 12 series win since a really strange, I don't know. Oklahoma State was a young team coming in. We knew it was going to take them a little bit of time, and they did not start the season well. And they lose a series at Arizona. Three straight weekends, they had three straight series losses at Arizona State, Eastern Michigan, and then, oh, I'm sorry, this is 3 of 4 weekends, at Arizona State, Eastern Michigan, and Texas, all series losses. And that's not a good stretch. But they've found a way to come back, to regroup. They're older as a team, or they're maturing as a team. And, you know, they've now won these three straight Big 12 series, and they're right there with these other contenders. And, you know, they still have it all in front of them. So they still have to play Oklahoma and Texas Tech.
Yeah, no, it's Oklahoma State is certainly a really interesting case. They've done some really loud things these last few weeks, And, you know, a team that, as you said, a little bit younger. We weren't really sure coming into this year what to expect out of them. They've reloaded since the year they were in Omaha a couple years ago. It's a completely different team. It's a totally different team, and they've had to start from the beginning. And looking at what they've done this year, what's really interesting is the amount of success they've had, even though they're pitching to a 5.19 team ERA. They haven't...
Which is not what you expect from the... That's not their identity.
Pitching has been their strength over the years. Rob Walton, their pitching coach, does an excellent job there. But there's just so much turnover on that staff, and just looking at, you know, the different configurations they've tried on the weekend, different starters, different guys out of the pen. It's really been difficult for them to piece it together on the mound, but it speaks to, you know, some of these experienced players on the team and also the coaching job that Josh Holliday has done there, that they've been able to find ways to win despite the fact that they haven't had traditionally strong pitching performances like we've come to know from that coaching staff and that team these last few years. So they're an interesting case, there's no question. I'm curious to see how they match up going forward, you know, against Oklahoma in a couple weeks, and then finishing the Big 12 slate against Texas Tech. I'm interested to see how those arms match up against those teams, because, you know, with some of the bats that both of those teams have, it's not going to be easy to pitch to them, especially, you know, Steele Walker at Oklahoma and some of the veteran big bats in Texas Tech as well. So props to Oklahoma State for what they've done so far. I'm still, if I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I'm a little cautiously optimistic with them, but certainly...
That's definitely fair.
But certainly with where their RPI is and with what they've done over these last few weeks, they've put themselves in a good position, and as long as they're able to kind of hold their own here these next few weeks, I think you're looking at a potential regional team here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're sitting in the 30s RPI-wise. You know, they have... not only those two Big 12 series, they also have a series at Iowa near the end of the year that should be helpful to them in terms of bolstering their resume. And you know, that means that they're going to have to keep playing well. But if they do that, you know, I think they're in a very strong position here in the Big 12. You know, the top half of the Big 12 looks really good, and you know, it's continues to be the number two RPI league, and this is going to be a fight to the finish here. Among these top few teams in this conference to see who comes out as conference champions, if anyone can dethrone two-time defending champ Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm. And we can't forget about, even though very likely they're out of the race here to win the Big 12, but we can't forget about TCU, a team that they went to Kansas this weekend. You know, they had dropped a consecutive series, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, and they went to Kansas and won that series, won the first two games.
Third
was canceled. And that's a really important win for TCU. They were a team that, in our field of 64, we were trying to figure out with the metrics where they were, should they stay in?
We kept them in a week ago, and it was...
We didn't feel great about it.
Kind of an iffy decision.
We didn't feel great about keeping them in, but we also didn't feel great about taking them out, given what they... I mean, they've been to Omaha four straight years.
Well, and the talent is there. And
yeah.
If they get hot in the second half, they're not going to be who you want to see in your regional. And, you know, that they've won four straight, and it's been an important four straight to get them back, you know, both in a good spot record-wise and RPI-wise and conference standings-wise. And right now, where they are today, I feel a lot better about them than I did a week ago. There's still a lot of work to be done. They still have, you know, some tough series with Texas Tech and Texas still on the schedule. You know, but they're looking a lot better right now, I think.
Yeah, I think there's reason to be a bit more optimistic, especially doing what they did this weekend. But, you know, they'll have another tough trip. They're going to Baylor this weekend coming up, and Baylor's been a team, even though they're 17-17 overall, they've shown flashes this year. They've beaten some tough competition.
Just ask Texas Tech.
Yeah, so there's no real gimme weekend in the Big 12 right now, as we talked about, the number two conference RPI overall. So it's going to be an interesting race to watch unfold over these next few weeks.
Yeah, and it's definitely one that we're watching. I don't know where I'm going with this.
We're always watching. We're always watching, Teddy.
We are.
We always know where we're going with things. As if you've listened to this podcast.
Where we're going next is to the SEC, where there were a couple of really significant series this weekend, and we're going to get to them. But right now, a word from our sponsor, Health IQ. How would you like to save money for being active and physically fit? Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/BA or call 1-800-549-1664 to talk to a Health IQ agent and mention the promo code BA for savings. Now, Mike, like I just mentioned, a couple big SEC series, as always. We put 8 to 9 teams in the top 25. We get outstanding series. Georgia hosts Kentucky, and Kentucky goes on the road and wins a huge series in terms of, you know, just getting back to that. Their SEC record was not good before this weekend.
They were definitely sliding a little bit. I mean, we've been on record. If you've listened to our podcast, if you've read our website at all, we've been on the Kentucky train this year. We like Kentucky. We like their team. We like their talent. We think they have a chance to make a lot of noise in the postseason. But that SEC record was a little concerning. They were slipping in the SEC East standings, and then you have this Georgia team who has been a really pleasant surprise this year. And you wrote, I know, a little bit about them this last week on baseballamerica.com if you want to take a deeper dive. But they've been a really pleasant surprise in the SEC this year. They put themselves in great position. They're second to Florida in the SEC East, even after this weekend. So they've put themselves in a really good position, a top 10 RPI. Kudos to them and the job they've done. But Kentucky needed something.
They were 5-7 in the SEC coming into this weekend. They really hadn't proven that they could win on the road yet. You know, they'd won in Houston in a neutral environment, but in a true road setting, they hadn't done it yet.
No, they were swept at Arkansas, which, again, was a really difficult series. They lost to Alabama 2 out of 3, which not a great series loss for them. So you're right, they needed something.
And so they go down there, and this is another really tight series all weekend. And like we talked about with Texas, Kentucky got down in game one, found a way to come back against the Georgia bullpen in the ninth inning and then win it in extras. You know, so they take game one that way. Then on Saturday, they play a doubleheader. Georgia jumps out to a big lead. Kentucky kind of fights back a little bit, forces Georgia to put Ryan Webb, who was scheduled to start game two, into the game to close it out, setting up the rubber game, and Kentucky wins that 1-0. Really strong performance for them to close out a series win. And it was big for them for a lot of reasons. I don't want to overstate where they had been. You know, I think we trusted the talent would eventually start playing to a higher level. But, I mean, I personally feel a little bit better about Kentucky right now, knowing that they have gone out and shown that they can win on the road, having been 1-5 entering this weekend in SEC Road Series. And this was a very tense series, you know, and to be able to win like that on the road, I think maybe is making me feel better about that.
Yeah, and to clarify as far as our worries with Kentucky, I mean, neither of us, it's not like we were pressing the panic button with them. It was more just they were starting to slip a little bit, maybe even out of hosting range.
Yeah, I was questioning how they could host. And
yeah,
I'm still, I mean, they still have work to do. They're still under 500 in the league, and you aren't going to host under 500 in the league. And I don't think they're finishing under 500 in the league. But, like, when they were where they were, knowing what they had still on their slate, it was hard to say, well, you know, they deserve to host over, you know, some of these other teams when they have the league record that they do.
Right, right. And, you know, obviously a big, big series win for them. They're now 7-8 in the SEC. It's not going to get any easier. Rarely does it in the SEC. They're hosting Florida this weekend coming up. They also have a midweek at Louisville. So
I will point out that Kentucky has won back-to-back series in Lexington against Florida. You have to go back to 2012 for the last time the Gators won a series in Lexington. So there's a little bit of history on their side. I don't know if that's going to matter, but if anyone is going to trip Florida up, maybe it's this weekend.
Yeah, so that's yet another series, another SEC series to circle on your calendar, to pay close attention to.
If you like top 10 series with what should be some good pitching matchups,
yes,
Florida at Kentucky this weekend should be on your calendar.
No doubt, no doubt. And then, of course, the other big SEC series this weekend that caused maybe the biggest shakeups in our rankings was Vanderbilt and Ole Miss. Vanderbilt takes that series at home, a great series win for the Commodores.
Very, very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ole Miss wins on whenever they started that series. I guess it was on Friday. And then there was rained out on Saturday. So that sets up a Sunday doubleheader. And Ole Miss is winning both of these games late. And their bullpen has been one of the strengths of this team all season long. But Vanderbilt finds a way in both games to get walk-off wins. And, you know, it was a walk-off wild pitch in one of the games. But
you take it any way you can get it.
It happened. The Commodores found a way. And,
yeah.
And that's I mean, in some of these series, when these two really good teams are going at it, you just got to take it however you can get it.
Yeah, and so we didn't hit Ole Miss too hard in our rankings. We dropped them a couple spots. More so, the bigger change is we bumped up Vanderbilt. And I was sort of a big proponent of this in our call.
You've been high on Vanderbilt much of the season.
I have been. And for me, a big reason is I look at the non-conference schedule that they played. And then, you know, they start with a series against Duke, which is looking better and better. Duke is now up to number 8 in our poll this week, which every ranking they move up is their highest ever for us. They had never been ranked in our top 10. And so they have that series win. They traveled out to some tournaments. Really, I mean, the only bad weekend they had in non-conference play was at the Shriners Hospitals for Children College Classic in Houston, where they had dropped 2 games there. But I'll give them a pass for that. It's a competitive tournament. But you look at what they've done in the SEC, their only mistake is getting swept at Florida, which, again, Florida's really good. Reigning champs, I'll give them a pass for that. Otherwise, though, these last 2 weeks, I think that they've made really loud statements with the dramatic wins against Ole Miss and taking that series, and then also the week before that, beating Georgia, as we had mentioned, a team that had really climbed to the top of the SEC East there. And they also have a series win against LSU. They went to Mississippi State and swept Mississippi State. They've got a good resume here, and you know, they're a team that, you know, as we've talked about this year, some of their younger pieces have really stepped up for them this year and have played huge roles for them. And they kind of had a strange, weird transitional year last year, but it seems like we're getting closer to the Vanderbilt teams that we're used to seeing year in and year out.
Yeah, I still have some not insignificant questions about this Vanderbilt team. They keep losing midweeks. They finally didn't this week, but they keep losing midweek games. There's a depth question in the bullpen for me, and they don't have a true ace, which I'm not that concerned about. But there's a depth issue, I feel like, and I don't think it's going to bite them. They're clearly winning SEC series despite it. They're in position to host. They're going to be fine with all of this. But, you know, that is an area of concern going forward. But this weekend was the way they fought through it on Sunday, I thought showed a lot about this team. It's a young team, and so for those young guys to fight through a really tough day of baseball against a really tough Ole Miss team, I was very impressed by it. And you know, they did it without JJ Bleday and without Jason Gonzalez, two of their lineup regulars who are out right now. And those kids found a way to come out with these wins, and they're piecing it together in a lot of different ways. There are a lot of different ways Vanderbilt can beat you right now, and I think that is one of the most attractive things about the team, is just that there are a lot of different weapons that they can deploy offensively. And you know, I'm not sure that Tim Corbin still knows what his best lineup is. You know, I know the last time I talked to him a few weeks ago, he said he didn't. And I don't know if he's settled on it yet, but you know, I don't think he needs to, because there's so many different ways that they can mix and match, and you know, depending on who's available on any given day. And so I think that, you know, when we look at this team and how they continue to grow, I think maybe that's one of the most exciting things about them, is just that, you know, they have all of these different pieces to put together offensively.
Right. It's a different roster construction than some of these other teams that we're talking about in the SEC, some of these elite teams that are also ranked highly in our poll. It's not the, okay, you're going to bat third, you're going to bat fourth structure that we're seeing on some of these stack teams. It's different. They're going about it in a different way, but different doesn't always mean worse. And Vanderbilt, you can't argue with their resume.
Did you get that from a children's book?
I did not get that from a children's book. That's Lanana wisdom right there. That's pure Lanana wisdom. It's, for me, you look at the resume, you can't argue with it. Vanderbilt deserves to be where they are right now. And, you know, I think you look at all these teams in the top 10 from the SEC, obviously Florida, Arkansas. But, you know, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, all these teams are going to be really interesting to watch going forward, to see which one of them, if any of them, is able to pull ahead a little bit and break from this pack. It's going to be tough. I think more likely they continue to beat up on each other a little bit, and we have this mishmash of really good teams here in the SEC. But we'll see going forward. In the ACC, though.
Well, before we get there,
okay.
I wanted to
mention. I jumped the gun.
Texas A&M and LSU out west, they've been a little under the radar. They had, in A&M's case, they had a really poor start.
It's strange to hear those two programs and the term under the radar included with them.
Relatively under the radar. I mean, they've both been in the top 25 all year. But A&M had a really poor start to SEC play. They've now won six straight games, and their RPI is all the way up to 11.
Yeah.
And they're back above 500 in the league, and they've done it with a string of home games. Yes, but they are now playing much more like the team that I think we thought they would be. And they're about to head out on the road for 2 weeks, but it's at Tennessee and at Mississippi State. And if the SEC has two easy weekends, and it doesn't, but if they do, that's what it looks like. So A&M, they're on the rise right now. And LSU, which is the team A&M beat last week to start this six-game winning streak, you know, bounce back with a sweep of Tennessee. They had a really nice week overall, beating La Tech midweek. They've won four in a row, and they're now sitting at second place in the SEC West. And they still have RPI work to do, but again, if they keep winning, it's going to take care of itself in terms of getting it into a position where maybe they can host. And obviously in Baton Rouge, they're very used to hosting, and right now they're not in that position. And I think that's probably pretty worrisome for some people out there, but we're also getting into the second half of the season, which is when Paul Mainieri's teams find their stride. And this weekend against Tennessee kind of looked like maybe what this week in general, maybe that was kind of what it looks like. And the way they won last night's game, Daniel Cabrera hitting a monster, absolute monster shot to walk it off. And he knew it, and he flipped the bat like he knew it. But he deserved that. And it was for Paul Mainieri's 1,400th win in his career. Very impressive all around for LSU. And, you know, just the fact that they're now up to second in the West, I found to be very intriguing as we look at the SEC race.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I don't think I think both of us have a lot of belief, obviously, in Coach Mainieri and that program and the ability to, at the end of the year, be where we expect them to be. And I think even though their RPI is in the 40s right now, not where you're maybe used to seeing them, when it's all said and done, they're going to be right where we're used to seeing LSU. Things are going to come together nicely for them. They have the roster pieces. So certainly they're on the rise. You know, you mentioned Texas A&M, and I like what they've done these last couple weeks. It was much needed for them after they struggled a little bit with three straight series losses. Yes, three straight series losses. I am still a little concerned with what they've done on the road. They have struggled on the road. They haven't won a road series yet. They lost at Auburn. They lost at Georgia. So we'll see what they do at Tennessee, a team that has given some teams run for their money this year.
At home, Tennessee is tough. They beat Florida one game, and they played Florida tough in Knoxville. They did not play LSU as tough on the road this weekend. And that's another young team that, you know, it makes sense that they'd be – all of these teams are better at home, across the country, really. But it would make sense that a team like the Volunteers, who are a little younger, would be a little more comfortable playing in Knoxville.
Yeah, so we'll see how the Aggies do here. I'd like to see them win, ideally, both of these series.
I think they need to win these series.
The next two weekends, yeah. Because after that, I mean, they have Florida, and then they go to Arkansas. So that's going
to
be...
I think they need to keep this hot streak going and build up that head of steam as much as they can before the Gators come to town.
Yeah, but if they take care of business these next two weekends, they're going to be in very, very good shape.
Absolutely.
There's no question, especially with their RPI at 11 right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loud number. And, they're starting to... Starting to play much more like the top 10 team that they were in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Speaking of top 10 teams now.
Yes.
Let's go to that ACC.
Let's do it.
And we had a top 10 matchup in the ACC as well, where Duke, as Mike mentioned, in the top 10 for the first time ever, goes to Florida State, which was number 9 last week. Mm-hmm. And... Duke wins the series. They won the two games in Tallahassee. The third was rained out. That is Duke's first win at Florida State since 1994, which is a long time ago.
I was 3 years old.
And so the Blue Devils had a tough weekend previously at Wake Forest, losing a series. And they bounced back in a really big way, beating the Seminoles. And they remain in first place in their division. Mm-hmm. And, we've talked about just how Duke continues to surprise. And they're showing no signs, really, of slowing down at this point. They're second in the country to wins. Only Florida has more wins than Duke does right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, all credit goes to Coach Chris Pollard and Josh Jordan, the recruiting coordinator, and the job that coaching staff has done. I mean, they've really built this program up over the last few years, and we saw signs of them putting things together. We thought coming in, they're a regional team this year. We certainly expected them to have a good year. We didn't expect, we'd be lying if we said we expected 30-7 in first place in the Coastal right now. I'm not sure I'd be interested to ask them if they would have expected that. I'm sure they expected to have success, but 30-7 is loud, and first place in the Coastal is loud. And this week is going to be a fun week in this area locally, because we're going to have this collision course now of Duke against NC State, another team that has its highest ever ranking in our top 25. They're number 2. They continued, even though they struggled in the opening game in Notre Dame, coughed up.
For like the fourth week in a row, they lost the opener of a series.
They're still finding ways to come back, and now we have a top 10 series right here in our backyard between NC State and Duke. And beyond that, we have Duke and East Carolina playing a midweek game, which ECU, they dropped a series to South Florida this weekend, but it's really the first hiccup they've had in a while, ECU. They've been really good this year. They dropped out of our top 10, but they're still very much on the top 10 radar. And then we have UNC playing State at the DPAP. At Durham Bowles Park, where Duke plays its home games.
And Duke, as a result, will return to its on-campus home for the midweek game. It's going to be a fun group here. North Carolina won another series this weekend, and they just have continued to get a lot.
They're finding the right formula.
They have found whatever was going wrong.
Yeah.
Early in the season, they've fixed it. They're winning games, they're winning consistently, and they're just off of Duke's pace in the division. Just a half game because Duke's third game was rained out.
This is the team that we expected to see. We ranked them 6th in the preseason, and while we expected State and Duke to be good this year, we certainly expected them to be good. We expected Chapel Hill, UNC to beat the best of the bunch, and... At this point, I mean, it's going to be really fun because these teams are all playing each other over these next few weeks. I'm not sure how it's going to shake out. We're going to have to see. But all teams are playing really well right now. They're clustered here in the same area, not many miles apart. So it's, people talk about March Madness in this area with UNC basketball and Duke basketball and occasionally State basketball as well up there in the Final Four and in the championship. It's going to be a little different this year, baseball-wise. We got all three of these teams are firing. ECU's doing really well. It's going to be really interesting to see who comes out of this.
The ACC does not guarantee that Duke and State play. They lucked into this weekend, but everyone benefits by the ACC's scheduling luck. Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous that they don't play every year, but you know, such is life with these ACC divisions, that a team 20 miles apart aren't guaranteed to play. But whatever, I digress. But this weekend, when State and Duke go at it, it's going to be very interesting. It's kind of two contrasting styles a little bit, in that you know they're both very old teams. They got a lot of juniors and seniors, but State is maybe a little more offensive. Duke is maybe doing this a little more on pitching, which is a little surprising in itself. But I think that's going to be a fun one. And you know, those teams are kind of separating themselves a little bit. Clemson is still there. You know, they're only a couple games behind NC State in their division race. But Clemson this weekend, with one of the bigger upsets, was beaten in Clemson. That's their second ACC series loss at home. This one comes at the hands of Miami, which had been scuffling, but Miami gets off the mat, finds a way to go to Clemson, win a series. Evan McKendry pitched lights out in the decider on Saturday, and you know, the Hurricanes are still under 500 overall, but you know they're feisty, and you know they're healthier now too, which is a really big turn of events for Miami.
Yeah, and that Friday game. That Friday the 13th game that they played, oh my goodness. I mean, Miami scored 8 runs in the 9th inning. 8 runs in the top of the 9th inning to force extras. They went 12 innings.
I mean, that's disastrous for Clemson.
Yeah, no, it looks worse on Clemson probably than it looks good for Miami. Anytime you cough up 8 runs in an inning. But, I mean, you have to give credit, too, to Miami hitters for not giving. They could very easily just go up there, those 3 at-bats in the 9th, and just say, hey, we're not coming back in this. You know, may as well swing at everything. Clemson literally scored 5 runs in the bottom of the 8th to pad their lead. They have a commanding lead. They're up 11-3 here, and Miami scores 8 runs in the top of the 9th. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's some Friday the 13th magic.
And I don't want to go overboard here, but if we look back a month from now, it's quite possible that will have saved Miami's season.
It certainly is. I mean, they still have a lot of work to do, but you know, getting safely above 500 is chief among those goals.
Just getting to 500 overall would be a good start. But yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's similar. I mean, the ACC is very, we've talked about it before. It's a very bizarre year this year. I mean, even a team, I mean, Wake Forest is third in the Atlantic right now. They're only 3 games back of State, and they still play the 2 teams in front of them. They could conceivably win it, but they're also below 500. They're 17-20.
Looking at Miami's upcoming schedule here.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh. At Florida State, Bethune-Cookman, at Virginia Tech, Boston College. I think they get this done.
That's doable. That's very doable. I mean, obviously, at Florida State, anything can happen there.
It's a rivalry series. It's going to be a very emotional rivalry series this year, especially it being Jim Morris's final year.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, throw the records out on that one. But even so, Florida State's scuffling right now, and if they don't get right this weekend at Boston College, you know, they're going to be, you know, looking at, you know, an extended skid at that point when Miami comes.
Yeah. So it's, again, there's a lot to, there's a lot that needs to happen these next few weeks. But right now, I mean, again, a hat tip goes to the Duke coaching staff and also to NC State for what both of those teams have been able to pull off this year. No easy feat, especially given the competition that they have, and really, I mean, the stranglehold that a team like Louisville has had over the ACC since they joined the conference. Florida State, a team preseason number 3 for us, a lot of talent. I mean, those are the powers, teams like that. Obviously, Carolina, too, a team with a lot of returning talent. Those are the teams that you expect, and here you have NC State and Duke not only leading their respective divisions, but also both in the top 10 of this poll. Pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Two of the bigger surprises around the country this year. Those were the bigger conference series. We also had a fun little non-conference jaunt with Oregon State heading out to Springfield to play Missouri State at Springfield, Missouri. Oregon State they'd lost two series back-to-back coming into this weekend, and they sure didn't look like a team that lost back-to-back series going to play a team that made Super Regionals a year ago. On Friday, when they scored 27 runs in like 11 innings, I think it was, at Missouri State.
It's a lot of runs, not a lot of innings, and it was much needed from Oregon State. I think they let out a little frustration, maybe you could say, given really these last couple of weekends that they've had. They dropped back-to-back Pac-12 series at Utah, surprisingly, a team that's still 9-25 overall. That series is still mind-boggling to me. And then lost at Arizona, which a team that's less mind-boggling. Arizona is starting to put things together a little bit. But going to Missouri State, a very good team this year, battling with Dallas Baptist in that conference. For Oregon State to come in there and put up the kind of run totals that they did, certainly really impressive. And I have to think, you know, maybe they're feeling a little bit better. And this is kind of what we were talking about last week, where maybe this break from Pac-12 play, they can kind of figure things out a little bit and then come back. Now they're playing Oregon, which obviously that's going to have some rivalry action and a little extra feel to it.
Pat Casey tried to downplay that to me last night or two nights ago, but I guess that was just yesterday. The days run together. But no, I mean, it's a big rivalry. But his point was that they're not in a position where they can look at anyone as a rival. Everyone has to be a rival. And I think that's fair, given where they are in that conference and how tightly bunched that conference is.
Yeah, and we were talking about it last night. I mean, we've been talking a lot about Stanford and Oregon State this year, but UCLA currently leads the conference right now, and they're on a little bit of a roll. They're 22-9 overall. Their RPI is up to 35. They're 11-4 in the conference. They swept Utah this weekend. They have that series win against Stanford, which is going to be very good for them going forward. They're in good shape right now.
They're in great shape, and I think that, you know, we've talked about some teams getting healthier. They're a team that has gotten healthier. They're still hoping that they can get healthier still. It's going to be very intriguing to see that team if they can get back to 100%. What that looks like for them. And they've got a rivalry this week coming up as well with USC, the big crosstown showdown in LA, and they're going to be looking for a little bit of payback after the Trojans won the game at Dodger Stadium earlier this season. But so that's a big one for UCLA. That's kind of a series that they can keep things rolling here.
Yeah.
And it finishes a little more difficult for them. They still have road trips to Arizona, Washington, and Oregon State to come. Those are three teams in the top half of the Pac-12. I expect all three of them to stay there. Those are going to be tough for UCLA. But having said that, it's a team that's playing really well right now, that has a lot of talent, and they conceivably could go out and hold this position they have at the top of the conference. I thought that what they did this weekend, scoring, trying to do math really quickly, scoring, is that 40 runs? That can't possibly be right. 34 runs. That sounds better. Utah.
We need the calculator here for the baseball
math
America podcast
on the fly while I'm talking. Not the easiest. They put up a lot of runs this weekend at Utah, and I think that offense has been very solid all season. And now that they're getting a little healthier on the mound, I think the two of those things coming together makes the Bruins a very dangerous team.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's any question. And we have a really interesting three-horse race here now at the top of the Pac-12 between UCLA, Stanford, and Oregon State. Obviously, UCLA, in terms of conference standings, has the edge right now, but Stanford's right there, only half a game back, and they're, of course, number three in our poll. It's going to be interesting to see which of these teams in the middle group of the Pac-12 emerge going forward, which of these teams make it. I mean, you have a team like Washington, which is third in the standings, but 17-15 overall, 52 RPI. They're kind of bubbly.
I think right now, yeah, they're bubble. If the season ended, I think that being third in the Pac-12 would carry the day.
Correct.
But they're also, I mean, that overall record is shaky, and they can, you know, they can't feel like they're in good, they're in safe hands at this point at all. But this weekend beating Oregon in a series was a big one for the Huskies.
Right. And then you have Arizona, as we mentioned, a team that seems to be on the rise. You know, they're going to have an opportunity this weekend against Stanford. If they can get a win there, or, you know, obviously even take the series, that would be huge for them. You have a team, Oregon's going to have a great opportunity against Oregon State this weekend. They're a team that has battled some inconsistency, but has shown some flashes this year. And Cal, which is down in the RPI, Cal has probably the most work to do, at least from an
RPI.
At least from an RPI standpoint. But they still have a trip to Stanford and a trip to Creighton, which Creighton's RPI has been declining a bit, but they're a team that has performed well to this point so far this year. So it's going to be interesting which of these teams, because we know the Pac-12 obviously is going to be more than a three-bid league. I'm curious to see which of these teams secure those bids going forward.
My hunch is this is a five-bid league. It's a little early to talk about that in some ways, but my hunch is it's a five-bid league, and it's the five teams you're looking at right now. I think Cal and Oregon have both left themselves with too much work to do. I think Washington can get it done. And I feel really good about Arizona. I think, as I mentioned a week ago, the schedule sets up really well for the Wildcats. They're back to 500 in the league, which is significant. They're in the 30s in RPI. You know, I think the Arizona, you know, again, you can't feel secure, but I think they're in a solid position overall. I also wanted to quickly get to Missouri State here, which a week ago had some momentum and I think was eyeing up what could have been a pretty big week with Missouri coming to town and then Oregon State, and then they have Arkansas on Tuesday here. All opportunities to really make a mark, you know, put their flag in the ground as a regional team firmly, or you know, declare themselves as the team to beat in the Missouri Valley. They're 0-3 in the stretch now, and their RPI has cratered. They're down to 64, and suddenly Missouri State has work left to do. And it's still doable. You know, I still think they can make a regional. The conference they play in is a solid one, but this was not what Missouri State was hoping for with the big time spotlight coming to town of Missouri and Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, even just stealing a win, just one of those, it would have been helpful. They do have a trip to Arkansas this week, which is going to give them another opportunity. And they do have, you know, going forward, they have several series remaining on the road, including finishing at Dallas Baptist, which is going to be key, not only for RPI standpoint, but likely for the conference lead at that point, depending on how they both teams fare these next couple of weekends. DBU, of course, is in our top 25 at number 23.
They just keep winning.
They do. They do.
They just find ways. And, you know, every week I'm like looking at their scores and like it's a tight game, and all of a sudden DBU scores like five runs late and they wind up pretty comfortably winning their games. It's an impressive offense.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only thing they've done wrong this year is they got swept at Clemson. That's the only mistake that they've made this year. But otherwise, Dallas Baptist has been cruising. They've played really, really well of late. And, you know, the Missouri Valley is going to be fun to watch between those two. Right now, Bradley leads.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, I do think those are the top two teams in the league. But, you know, I mean, we got Bradley sitting here at 19-9, and they're leading the league at 7-2. And Illinois State has been tough this season. They've got a win at Washington. You know, Indiana State, it has been a really solid team, or was really solid in the non-conference. They're only 3-6 in the league now, but you know, they've been pretty tough. So it's an intriguing league, and you know, I do think Dallas Baptist is the team to beat here, but it's going to be an exciting you know, second half of the year in the MVC, I think.
No doubt. And then you know, bouncing around a little bit more, we mentioned ECU a little bit, and the American remains.
The American is doing its thing again.
Yeah.
Mike, have you looked at the American standings yet?
I'm looking at it right now. We have a three-way tie for first place between South Florida, Houston,
and Cincinnati. 7-5.
At 7-5. And then we have ECU and UConn, both half a game out. Both of those teams, you know, UConn has put together a nice couple of weekends. They have series wins against UCF and at Wichita State. Very impressive from the Huskies. Suddenly, their RPI is in the top 10. They're number 9 in RPI right now.
Stunningly, considering they have a series loss at the Citadel, which is like 261.
The thing that benefits UConn is they play
a million
hella games on the road. They've only played 6 home games this year, so that's a big benefit for UConn. But yeah, the American now, all of a sudden, Wichita State, a team that was on the borderline of getting in our top 25, they're 8th in the conference, although they're only at 1.5 games back.
The top 18, Memphis is 1-8 and has been kind of non-competitive in the league to this point, but the top 8 teams are separated by a game and a half.
It's insane. It's a battle royale. It's going forward. I mean,
every year, like clockwork, the American does this.
It's
I don't know what they have. I don't get how this happens every single year. But here we are, and we can't, like, trying to separate these teams is not easy. And you know, I think South Florida had a strong case for the top 25, and in another week, they get in probably.
Yeah.
This was a week where we weren't looking for new teams.
We didn't have many holes to fill.
And, you know, there have been weeks this year where we've been looking for new teams. But this was not one of them. But South Florida, a very intriguing team. And I thought the way they won this weekend was, it showed a lot.
Well, their ace got rocked. I was on hand the Friday night at ECU. Shane McClanahan, their ace, only lasted 4 innings. He really struggled. Really struggled against ECU. They win that game 15-2. Brian Packard had a huge game, hit 2 home runs, nearly had a grand slam. Huge game. But then South Florida comes back the very next day. They win 13-1. They return. They give ECU a taste of their medicine, and then win a very closely played game the next day, 5-4.
They very much did give ECU a taste of their own medicine. I don't know if you saw this, Mike, but in that Saturday game, Joe Nord of USF is taking his time getting into the box a little bit, and Gavin Williams, ECU pitcher, I guess yells at him to get in the box or something. And so finally Nord does get in the box, and he goes deep off of him, and he pimped the home run rather intensely, and that set up a whole line of fireworks. And obviously, I wasn't there, but I can only imagine. And I saw some other reports of how the ECU faithful, who are lively,
they're a lively group,
treated Jonard the rest of the weekend. But you know, so South Florida is a team that you look at. McClanahan is going to be like a top 10 pick in the draft, top 5 pick potentially. And the way they set up, you figure it's just like, okay, win with McClanahan on Friday, find a way to win one other game, you win the series. Well, that hasn't really been the way it's working for them of late, and it definitely wasn't this Friday. Mm-hmm. And ECU is a team that's really struggled in game ones the last month or so of the season. And so for them to win on Friday and then not be able to finish the series, and conversely for USF to get beat with their ace on the mound, their you know, ace, capital letters, all capital letters, ace on the mound.
I mean, a lefty who can touch 99.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's a premier pitcher.
He's got stuff.
So you get beat with him on the mound, and then you come back on the road, win the next 2 games. I thought that said a lot about USF. You know, and I think that's a intriguing team going forward. You know, they also beat UConn earlier this year, and we obviously have liked UConn a lot throughout the season. They've been on our top 25 before, and you know, so I like what the Bulls have. And you know, first year coach Billy Moll inherited he was the pitching coach. Now he's promoted, and he's taken over a really good group of players, and he's got them playing very well at a good time in the year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But again, I'm going to avoid making any bold predictions in the American, because it's seriously a revolving door. You know, just when we thought that maybe we were starting to get just a tiny ounce of separation, just a tiny ounce, very little with East Carolina, they dropped this weekend series. although they're a prime bounce back candidate, they're going to Memphis this weekend. And as we said, Memphis has not fared very well this year, at the very least.
That's a rough start.
1-8 in the conference. So you would hope. But again, the American, again, I'm not going to make a prediction.
It would be just like the American for Memphis to finally win a series and it to be this week.
If Memphis was in second place in the American like 3 weeks from now.
Absolutely, 100%.
I would not be surprised.
Because if Memphis was in second place 2 weeks from now. If they go to like 6-0 from here on, like 100%.
It just wouldn't be a surprise because this conference is just cuckoo. But I think I think we've covered a really
before we wrap it up.
Okay.
I wanted to get to another slightly less crazy, but still kind of crazy conference, the Big Ten. We brought Illinois into the top 25 this week after a couple weeks of them being out. They're back. Indiana continues to roll. They swept Northwestern. They're up to number 12 in the top 25. Illinois checks in at number 25. Michigan has won 17 straight games after a pretty terrible start to the season. That was a really young team. We talked about this with Oklahoma State. Young team maturing, finding itself. Michigan's doing that, and they haven't lost in a really long time. And they're 8-0 in the conference. Minnesota's a team that was right on the edge of the top 25, too. They've won 7 in a row. They're 7-1 in the league. Ohio State continues to play really well. Iowa's playing really well. So these are the top six teams in the Big Ten. And over the next few weeks, they're all playing each other a lot. And so I think the next 3 weeks in the Big Ten are going to tell us a lot about how it all will shake out. You know, we really believe Indiana is the best team in the league. They're going to get the opportunity to prove that. And some of these other teams that are trying, you know, maybe looking at Indiana, preseason favorite, you know, thinking, you know, we can compete with them. Well, they're going to get their chance to prove it this weekend. And where the standings are in just a couple weeks here, I think is going to give a lot more clarity to this league. But it's a really good group at the top of the Big Ten. And they're all playing really well. And I think that's going to be fun to watch over the next few weeks.
Definitely. A lot of really cool storylines there. And a lot of teams that aren't separated by many games in the standings at this point. So it's going to be fun. There's no question about that. The Big Ten, you know, they rank sixth in conference RPI right now. Illinois and Indiana, obviously, both are top 25. And we'll see. I mean, we've talked about some of these teams, specifically Minnesota as a team on the radar for us in the top 25. So we'll see who else could play in and how it factors into our field of 64 projections as well going forward.
Absolutely. That will be very intriguing to this week try and parse which of these Big Ten teams we put in and which we do not.
Teddy's exasperated tone right now really does perfectly represent how difficult putting together this field of 64 is going to be this week. But we're going to do it because we care about you, because we know you like it. And we're going to put it together, and we're going to do our best, as we always
check
do.
Check it out on Wednesday. It'll be up over at baseballamerica.com.
I want to point out a couple quick things, and then I'm going to give the floor to you.
Awesome.
If you want to say anything else. I want to give a shout-out to Friday. We had two players, not just one. I thought it was just one. I missed one, but I'm glad for everyone on Twitter who pointed out that there was a second one. Thank you. On Friday, there were two different players who had five home run days. Two different players. That's insane. That's crazy. So we have Austin Peay, first baseman, Parker Phillips. And again, both of these players played in doubleheaders. So let's clarify. They happened in doubleheaders, but it's still an impressive accomplishment nonetheless. Parker Phillips, Austin Peay, went 6-for-8, five home runs, 10 RBIs. Great day. Great day. Fantastic day. That's a day Parker Phillips is probably never going to forget. And now, Miami of Ohio, Ross Haffey, 7-for-9, 5 home runs, 12 RBIs. On the same day, Friday the 13th, some more Friday the 13th magic, we have two players who have excellent luck on that day, both hit 5 home runs. Shout out to both of you.
While we're talking about Ross Haffey, I want to mention that he hit another home run. That series, because they played a doubleheader, they didn't play on Saturday. The series resumes on Sunday. First inning, he homers again. 6 homers on the weekend.
Tip of the cap, Ross Haffey. Tip of the cap.
I've seen a lot of games at Ball Diamond. A lot of times when the wind's blowing out, I don't think I've ever seen 6 homers in a weekend.
That's a lot of homers. That's more homers than I hit this weekend, for sure.
Yeah.
I only hit like four or five.
Only four?
Only four or five, yeah. But anyway, Teddy, you know, that's all I have to bring to the table. Yeah, I feel really good about my podcast performance today. I feel like I left nothing to be desired, but if I did, find me on Twitter at mlanana, L-A-N-A-N-N-A. Find me, tweet at me, and we'll discuss it. Teddy?
I got a couple things I want to mention here. First, we got Noah Zavalois, and I apologize to Noah, whose name I probably just mispronounced. But the Harvard senior threw a no-hitter against Yale on Friday. That's a huge rivalry, obviously, you know, one of the oldest in the country. And, you know, he strikes out a career-high 12 batters, just a walk and an error were the only blemishes on the day. And that's the first no-hitter for Harvard since Ben Crockett threw one in 2001. And Ben Crockett is now the Red Sox player development director. So maybe Noah's on a big league path here. We'll see. Also, Samford. We mentioned Michigan with its 17-game winning streak. Samford has a 12-game winning streak now. And that's their longest winning streak since 1959. Impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They did it this weekend by sweeping Mercer, the three-time defending SoCon champs, and they held Mercer to one run all weekend.
That's pretty good.
That was a good weekend for the Bulldogs, who are now in first place in the SoCon. Very impressive. They also beat Auburn, pretty good in a midweek game. So the Samford riding high. Very impressive winning streak. Still chasing, however, Tennessee Tech, which has now won 20 games in a row. Demolished Murray State this weekend. I don't know how else to put it. They scored a lot of runs, and they are just cruising in the Ohio Valley, and you can probably call that race at this point. Although Morehead State, still going to have something to say about that maybe, especially since they closed the season with hosting Tennessee Tech. But Tennessee Tech has just been dominant.
I mean, 20 straight runs is 20 straight wins.
They've won 20 in a row. They have 29 wins overall, which is third most in the country. Only Florida and Duke more wins than Tennessee Tech. Again, the Golden Eagles just continue to be very impressive here. So that, I believe, will wrap us up. We've covered a lot of topics today.
We did, even some Ohio Valley talk.
We got the Ohio Valley in. We got the Maction in. We got
Missouri Valley. We got some Big 12. We got some American. We got a little bit of everything.
There was a lot. There was no Fun Belt, but otherwise, I mean, I feel like we hit it. And Coastal, we'll just get some Fun Belt right now. Coastal continues to roll.
And then your Fun Belt. Let's throw in some Colonial Athletic. We have Charleston. Yes. We have College of Charleston. Yeah.
Very, very interesting series in the CAA with Charleston and Northeastern going at the top two teams in the league. And Northeastern has a pretty crazy RPI still, despite losing the series. Charleston finds a way to come out with the first two wins. Northeastern gets a win on Sunday, very important win for the Huskies. We had them in the field of 64 last week. They're probably still there, you know, and Charleston really shoring up its resume this weekend. I feel like, you know, their RPI is in the 30s. They have a sweep of Georgia. They won a series at K-State. If they don't win the CAA's auto bid and they finish this out from this point, they continue to take care of business, I think the Cougars are in a strong position to get an at-large if they need it.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a great job there by Chad Holbrook after, you know, the fans in South Carolina essentially kind of willed him out of South Carolina. He's hasn't missed a beat since he's gone to Charleston. Again, as you said, 27-10, a really impressive weekend series win against Northeastern. They have the sweep against Georgia earlier in the year, which is looking better and better by the day. So a really impressive 27-10.
They're now one win shy of last year's total.
Yeah, so Chad Holbrook has really done a nice job taking over that team, and there's a lot of talent on that team as well. This isn't anything about this is flukish. So a tip of the cap to them as well. I think, you know, so now we have the Colonial. We did the Sun Belt Conference.
We're overflowing here. There is a really great weekend of college baseball, I feel like.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. There's a jam-packed weekend, and you know, it's only going to get going forward. These podcasts, I think, are only going to get juicier because we're going to have hosting conversation. We're going to have RPI.
Who isn't excited for that?
We're going to have bubbles on bubbles on bubbles, bubbles everywhere. It's going to be like College Station with all the bubbles, all the bubble talk, because they have the bubbles.
No, they know, do.
They blow the bubbles.
I'm right there with you.
After they hit the home runs.
The bubble machines, that's the reference. That's
I was expecting a bigger laugh, Teddy.
I apologize.
You could have given me an LOL there. I mean, come on. All right, guys. That's all I have for you.
Thank you for listening. Remember to check out all of our content over at baseballamerica.com if you thought this podcast was jam-packed. There is way more over there, so make sure to check that out. Follow Mike on Twitter. He's at mlanana. I'm at Ted Cahill. We'll have plenty more to come this week. Already mentioned the projected field of 64 and all the other wonderful things that you expect from us throughout the week. We will be back here next week for another podcast, and you can find that wherever podcasts are found, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, I don't know. Those seem like the main ones.
If you want, I'll just give you a call, and I'll just talk to you. I'll just talk to you for an extended period of time if you want. We could do it that way, too.
I think it would be better, though, if you just subscribed either on iTunes or SoundCloud or iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, because then it just comes to you, and you don't even have to think about it. And it just shows up on your phone.
Not thinking is nice.
I think it's a benefit.
Yeah.
No doubt. So yeah, make sure you do that. And while you're there, maybe just review us. Give us a 5-star rating, maybe. I don't know. That's your call.
Not every podcast feels like a 5-star, but this feels like a 5-star. I mean, come on. I mean, you've made it to this point.
I feel like we've really rounded into form on this podcast. It was a little shaky at the start, but we got better as the season went on. We're like Oklahoma State right now.
I think so.
Or Michigan.
I think so. One of those teams. Yeah.
Remember to check us out, and we'll be back here next week. And so we want to thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.